Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Grant Takes Command by Bruce Catton is a narrative military history and biographical study of Ulysses S. Grant during the decisive final phase of the American Civil War. As the concluding volume in the Grant sequence, begun by Lloyd Lewis and carried forward by Catton, it follows Grant from the aftermath of Vicksburg and the crisis at Chattanooga through his appointment as General-in-Chief, the Overland Campaign, the Siege of Petersburg, and the Road to Appomattox. The book is not a full cradle-to-grave biography, nor is it a general survey of the Civil War. Its purpose is narrower and more focused to explain how Grant learned to command armies at continental scale, how he worked within the political pressures of Washington, and how his strategic persistence helped turn Union superiority into military victory. Catton combines campaign detail with character analysis, presenting Grant as plain, practical, resilient, and increasingly able to coordinate the entire Union war effort. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Grant's transition from Western victor to national commander. A central concern of Grant Takes Command is the transformation of Grant from the successful commander of Western campaigns into the figure entrusted with the direction of all Union armies. Catton begins from the moment when Vicksburg has made Grant indispensable but still unfamiliar to much of the political and military establishment in Washington. This position matters because Grant's authority was not simply granted by rank, it had to be tested through visibility, judgment, and trust. The Chattanooga campaign becomes a crucial bridge in Catton's account. It demonstrates that Grant could enter a confused command situation, simplify the problem, use available subordinates, and restore offensive momentum. Catton's Grant is not presented as theatrical or conventionally impressive. His strength lies in clear priorities, steadiness under uncertainty, and a refusal to let institutional hesitation become strategy. This topic gives the book its biographical arc. Grant's rise is not a sudden miracle but the result of repeated proof under difficult conditions. By emphasizing this transition, Catton explains why Lincoln and the Union government came to see Grant not merely as a winning battlefield commander, but as the officer most capable of imposing coherence on a fragmented war effort. Secondly, coordinated pressure as the strategic logic of Union victory. Catton gives particular importance to Grant's understanding that the war could not be won by isolated victories alone. Earlier Union campaigns had often produced impressive movements or temporary successes without forcing the Confederacy into a comprehensive crisis. Grant's contribution, as Catton presents it, was his insistence on simultaneous pressure across multiple theaters. The Army of the Potomac would engage Lee in Virginia, Sherman would move against Atlanta, and other Union forces would restrict Confederate mobility and resources. The reasoning behind this approach was practical rather than abstract. The Confederacy had survived in part by shifting forces, exploiting pauses, and relying on Union commanders who treated each campaign as a separate contest. Grant sought to deny that flexibility. Catton's account shows that this strategy required more than battlefield aggression. It demanded administrative coordination, political confidence, and the ability to accept losses without abandoning the larger design. The book, therefore, treats generalship as a problem of systems as well as tactics. Grant's command was decisive because it connected operations that had previously been managed too independently. Catton makes clear that the Union's material advantage became strategically meaningful only when Grant organized it into sustained, mutually reinforcing action. Thirdly, the Overland Campaign and the cost of relentless engagement. The Overland Campaign occupies a major place in Grant Takes Command because it reveals both the power and the moral burden of Grant's method. Catton follows the movement through the Wilderness, Spotsylvania, Cold Harbor, and toward Petersburg as a sequence in which Grant repeatedly refuses to retreat after costly fighting. The significance of this refusal is often misunderstood as mere indifference to casualties. Catton's treatment is more complex. He shows Grant recognizing that the Army of the Potomac had too often broken contact after hard battles, allowing Lee to recover the initiative and preserve Confederate morale. Grant's decision to move south after each engagement changed the psychology and operational rhythm of the Virginia War. At the same time, Catton does not make the campaign painless or simple. The losses were severe, and the fighting exposed the brutal arithmetic of a war nearing exhaustion. The book's value lies in showing why Grant's persistence was strategically rational without reducing suffering to numbers. The Overland Campaign becomes the test of whether the Union could keep applying pressure until Confederate defensive skill was no longer enough. Catton presents this as the hinge between battlefield endurance and final victory. Fourthly, civil military command under Lincoln's political constraints. Grant Takes Command also examines command as a political relationship, especially Grant's dealings with Abraham Lincoln, the War Department, and the expectations of Northern public opinion. Catton shows that Grant's success depended partly on his ability to operate within civilian authority without becoming immobilized by it. Lincoln needed a general who would fight continuously, but he also needed one who understood that military decisions existed inside an election year, a divided public, and intense scrutiny from newspapers and politicians. Grant's comparative lack of vanity becomes important in this setting. Unlike generals who competed for prestige or resisted supervision, Grant generally focused on the work before him and accepted the broader national purpose of the war. Catton does not portray Washington politics as a mere obstacle, rather, it is part of the command environment. The general-in-chief had to coordinate armies, manage reputations, and maintain enough confidence at the center to continue operations despite casualties. This dimension differentiates the book from a campaign chronicle. It shows that high command in the Civil War required political steadiness as much as battlefield calculation. Grant's relationship with Lincoln helped align military action with national policy at the moment when the Union most needed consistency. Lastly, Catton's narrative style and the limits of a Grant-centered view. One of the book's distinguishing features is Catton's ability to turn military history into a readable narrative without abandoning operational detail. He writes with attention to movement, command decisions, personality, and atmosphere, which helps general readers follow complex campaigns without requiring specialist training. His portrait of Grant is admiring but not purely celebratory. Grant emerges as unpretentious, stubborn, and effective. Yet the book remains aware that his effectiveness came within a destructive war of immense human cost. The narrative method is especially strong when linking individual temperament to strategic behavior. Grant's plainness, patience, and resistance to panic become military assets. At the same time, the Grant-centered structure creates certain limits. Readers seeking a broad social history of the Civil War, detailed Confederate homefront analysis, or an extensive treatment of emancipation policy will find those subjects secondary. Catton's primary interest is command, who made decisions, why they mattered, and how they shaped the closing campaigns. This focus is not a flaw so much as a definition of scope. The book stands as a study of military leadership and wartime execution. Best read for its explanation of how Grant's personal qualities translated into operational results. In conclusion, Grant Takes Command is best suited for readers who want a serious but accessible account of Civil War generalship, especially those interested in how Grant became the central military figure of the Union war effort. It will reward readers of military history, presidential and Civil War biography, and leadership studies, though it assumes some willingness to follow campaign movements and command relationships. Its practical benefit lies in its study of decision, making under pressure. Catton shows how persistence, clarity of purpose, coordination, and political reliability can matter as much as brilliance in isolated moments. Intellectually, the book helps explain why the Union's victory required more than superior resources. Those resources had to be directed by a commander able to keep multiple armies moving toward a common end. Compared with many Civil War books, Grant Takes Command stands out for the balance between narrative force and strategic explanation. It is less exhaustive than modern academic campaign studies, and less psychologically expansive than recent full biographies. But it remains unusually effective at showing Grant in motion during the war's decisive endgame. Catton's strength is synthesis. He makes the military sequence understandable while preserving the human texture of command. For readers seeking to understand how the Civil War was finally won at the level of high command, this book remains a durable and valuable work. If you would like to support Bruce Catton, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.